Thank you, Asha.
Okay, all set.
You gotcha.
We're here on Daf Chesamed Aleph, and we finished the sugya of Or Haner. And you may recall that we had a whole string of psukim to derive, from which we derive the requirement of Or Haner. So what I would like to do today is discuss with you some of the issues that come up in Bedikas Chometz, and it's all of our study today is focused on one line in the Mishnah. And you'll see on Daf Ches Amud Aleph, again, it's hard for me to say how many lines to count down from the top because it's almost halfway through the Yomud. But if you'll see a Tosus Dibur Maskel Hocha, so it's right below that, one line below that. Kol Makom She'ein Machnisim Bo Chametz Ein Tzorech Bedika. So the Gemara is now going to try to analyze what the extra word kol is. Kol is usually a ribui, it comes to include something. And it means that some place that you would have thought, or might have thought, that requires bedika, does not require bedika. I have to put this on silent. Sorry. Now, before we analyze these various cases, and what we're going to find is that in all these cases there is some sort of remote possibility that chametz was left in that spot, and maybe we should check it. Maybe it's a big tircha to check it, a big hassle. And the Mishnah is telling me kol makom, to include even this place, which may there's a remote chance there might be a chametz there, but you're not required to do bedika. Before we embark on this, I would like to exercise my right, which I left as we ended yesterday, to add something to our discussion about Al and Li. Because I find every time I look into that sugya, I find another chidush, so to speak. So that we want to talk about the following. I made myself a little bit of a note as to some of the points that I want to discuss with you. One point is the question of the Rambam and the Ravid. The Rambam and the Ravid in the case of a mitzvah shadayin asiyosa kayemes, which means that he forgot to recite the bracha over lasiyosam, before the asiyah, but the Rambam says he still has an opportunity to recite the bracha after the asiyah, if adayin asiyosa kayemes. So the Rambam gives a number of examples. He gives an example from tefillin, he's still wearing his tefillin, he gives an example from tzitzis, he gives an example from yeshiva besukkah, and then the Rambam adds v'chein kol kayotzi bazeh. So the Rambam has now established that there are a number of possible scenarios in which you could recite the bracha after the asiyah, after the actual maisa mitzvah. We had the case of netilas lulav, we had the case of bedikas chametz, we had the case of tvila b'mikvah, and now we have these cases of tefillin and the like, where it's adayin asiyosa kayemes. What's common to all these cases is that as a result of the fact that the Asiya has already been implemented, the Nusach HaBrocha is going to change. And what that means is that the Brocha with a Lamed is indicative of a Maisa, that you're about to do the Maisa, engage in this Maisa in order to fulfill and discharge your obligation. That's called Lamed. But the bracha with an al is indicative of the entire mitzvah, the cheftishal mitzvah, which encompasses even a kium, a fulfillment that's already been achieved. You've already achieved your basic fulfillment of the mitzvah. But in some sense, the mitzvah continues. For example, in the case of a ger, as a result, in the aftermath of his tevila, he still remains a Jew. So that's an ongoing chal Hashem. We suggested that perhaps in the case of lulav, holding on to the lulav, or at least shaking the lulav in halel, nanuim, means that the mitzvah is an ongoing mitzvah. In the case of bedikas chometz, it's not enough that he decided in his heart that he wants to be mavar the chometz, but we want him to actually physically get rid of the chometz. So the mitzvah continues. And the Rambam holds that in the cases of tefillin, tzitzis, and yeshiva besukkah, the mitzvah continues. And therefore you can still make a bracha, but once you're making the bracha, not on the action of the mitzvah, but the continuing situation of the mitzvah as it continues, then the nusach ha-bracha has to encompass much more than just the action, and that's going to be reflected in what nusach? Al. So we shift from the lamed to an al. The Ravid insists that in the cases of tzitzis and tefillin and yeshiva besukkah, the nusach ha-bracha should remain constant. It remains with a lamed. And the reason for that is because the Ravid holds that Adayin Asiyosa Kayemis means that the original Asiya, so to speak, is still in existence. It's ongoing because it still has an ongoing impact. And if that be the case, then you can still make the bracha on the Asiya, and that should be reflected by the bracha of a Lamed. The Ravid then asks the Rambam the following question. Well, what about Al Mikra Megillah? In the case of Al Mikra Megillah, we certainly have a case of a mitzvah that you're obligated in, you're about to engage in the Maisa. Why is the Musach HaBroch with an Al? Again, the Rambam has Al as an exception to the rule, when you've already implemented the Maisa, or you're a Shliach and you're not obligated in the Maisa. But here, if you're reading the Megillah, why should the bracha be Al Mikra Megillah? So the Ravid, if you recall, suggests that since it's only Derabbanan, therefore it's not like a Chova, you cannot make the bracha with a Lamed, and in order to reflect that difference between a Chova and what's called Ke'ein Rishus, it's like a voluntary mitzvah, in the case of a Derabbanan, which relative to a mitzvah d'oraisa is like a Rishus, the Nusach HaBracha shifts from Lamed to Al. So it's Al Mikra Megillah. No, if the principle now is that for a mitzvah d'Rabbanan you make a bracha with an Al, because it's like a Rishus, what question now should we ask?
Lamed Ner.
Exactly. What about Ner Chanukah? Ner Chanukah is another mitzvah d'Rabbanan, and yet, paradoxically, to our surprise, the bracha is Lahadlik Ner Chanukah. So the Ravid answers that Ner Chanukah is different. And we'll try to explain the connection between that the Ravid establishes between the Ner Chanukah and the Ner Sheva Beis HaMikdash, which is d'oraisa, in just a second. But when the Ravid says that a mitzvah d'Rabbanan is Ke'ein Rishus, and therefore the Nusach HaBrach has to shift from a Lamed to an Al, this is a bit of a problem. The Gemara Masechta Shabbos on Daf Chav Gimel, and some of you may remember that we discussed that not long ago. The Gemara asks, "How can you make a bracha on a mitzvah d'rabbanan? Heichan tzivanu? Where is the tzivui?" And the Gemara answers that we have a tzivui, because the Torah says, "Lo tasa shal yorucha," or "Vasisa shalavicha yagedcha." So we have a source for a mitzvah derabbanan. So what does the Ravid therefore mean when he says that on a mitzvah derabbanan you have to make a bracha with an al, because it's not a chova, In other words, the fundamental requirement of a lamed, of a bracha, the lamed is a chovas gavra. Here in this case with the rabbanan, it's not a chovas gavra. And the Gemara says that the reason why we do make a bracha, asher kidshanu b'mitzvosa vitzivanu on a mitzvah rabbanan, is because it is a chova. So I heard from my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, the following answer. He wants to say the following, that surely there's a chova, an obligation to fulfill a mitzvah d'rabbanan. But what is the nature of that chova? Is it a chova that's inherent and defined by this particular action that I'm doing? Or is this action only a means to an end to fulfill what the Chachamim asked me to do? Meaning the following, that in order to make a bracha with a lamed, the Ravid says you need more than just a chova. You need a chova on this particular mitzvah. When you look at that action of the mitzvah, what you see is an action that's obligatory. Now, if the Torah commands you in that action, then no doubt about it, I can make a bracha l'haniach tefillin, because hanachas tefillin is a maisa which the Torah mandates. But in the case of a derabbanan, although for sure I'm obligated in the derabbanan, but I'm not obligated in this particular maisa. So to say lasso, such a kishonim mitzvosa with a lamed on this action, that I can't do, says the Ravid, in the case of a derabbanan. Why? Because the action is only a means to an end. What am I accomplishing through this action? Did the Torah command me in this action? The Torah only commanded me to what? To listen to the Chachamim. And if the Chachamim command me to do a mitzvah, I have to do it because the Torah commands me to listen to the Chachamim. But which maisa specifically are the Chachamim going to mandate? There's no predetermined maisa. It's not like all the other mitzvahs, though, right? You know, we have Shasab mitzvahs, Losas, and Ramach mitzvahs Aseh. You know, the 248 mitzvahs Aseh, each one has its own well-defined action, which the Torah says, lasos, go ahead and do that action. But not so in the case of a derabbanan. And therefore, the Ravid is of the opinion that in the case of a mitzvah derabbanan, we shift the nusach habracha from a lamed to an al. Because now the al encompasses not just the maisa mitzvah, but the entire entity of the mitzvah. And the mitzvah here is generated by the chachamim, mandated midrabbanan, and now I have to fulfill that mitzvah. So now the Ravid asks, so what do we do with lahadlik ner Chanukah? So he says that Lahadlik Ner Chanukah was a bracha that was established at the time of the Beis Hamikdash on which mitzvah? Ner Sheva Menorah. And therefore it was established with a lamed. Even after the Churban HaBayis, they continue that Nusach HaBracha with a lamed in Lahadlik Ner Chanukah. So Rav Soloveitchik claims that this answer of the Ravid is only appropriate according to the Ravid himself, but not according to the Rambam. Why is that so? There's a machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid about the mitzvah of Ner Sheva Mikdash. And what's the case? This is in the Rambam in the Hilchos Bias Mikdash. And it says the following. Perek Tes Halacha Zayin Hilchos Bias Mikdash. The Rambam says that if a zar who's not a kohen lights the menorah, then it's kosher. Now the Ravid says, "What do you mean it's kosher? The Torah commands the kohen to light the menorah. That's a mitzvah on the kohen. How could the Israel? How could the zar fulfill that mitzvah?" So Reb Chaim, that was my Rebbe's grandfather, Reb Chaim Brisker, he answers the following. There's a fundamental machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid, how to understand the mitzvah of Hadlokas Ner Sheva Mikdash. The Ravid understood that the mitzvah is to do the act of Hadlokah. That's the very act of the mitzvah. And that's incumbent upon whom?
The Kohanim.
Mashenki, the Rambam understood that the mitzvah is not the actual lighting of the candle, but that the menorah should be a menorah d'luka, it should be a lit menorah that's positioned in its right place in the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, for example, according to the Rambam, let's say the menorah was removed from the Heichal, because there's no way a Zar could go into a Heichal. Even a Kohen can't go into the Heichal except for the Avodah. And the Zar lit the menorah outside the Heichal. It was the Kohen who brought it into the Heichal. So the Rambam Shita is that Yotzi Yadecho Vasa. Why? Even though the Kohen didn't do the act of Adlaka, what did he do? He guaranteed that the Heichal would be equipped with an Ner Dolok. So therefore the Rambam says that even though the Tzar was the one who actually did the Mais Hadlaka, that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is not the act of the Hadlaka, but the mitzvah is a result of the act of Hadlaka, the fact that the menorah is the menorah Dluka. Says Reb Chaim, the Raivan understood that the mitzvah is the Mais Hadlaka, and that's for sure on a Kohen excluding a Tzar. And therefore, there's no way that the Tzar, even outside the Heichal, could have lit the menorah, and the mitzvah could have been fulfilled. And therefore, says Rav Soloveitchik, based on his grandfather's Torah, there would be a difference between the Rambam and the Raivad as to what the Nusach HaBracha would have been back at the time of the Beis HaMikdash. The Raivad holds that the mitzvah is on the Maisa, therefore the Bracha would be Lamed, because Lamed indicates Lasos. But according to the Rambam, that the Asiyo is not the mitzvah, we're going to have to use a broader definition of the Bracha. The Bracha has to encompass the entire mitzvah, not just the action that he's about to implement. And that's going to be a Bracha with an Al. So, paradoxically, it comes out that the Raivit's explanation to justify the Nusach of Lahadlik Ner Chanukah, that works according to the Raivit. Because the Raivit himself holds that back in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Nusach HaBrach was what? With a Lamed Lahadlik. Why? Because the Raivit holds that the mitzvah is the Maisad Lok of the act itself. The Rambam, paradoxically, could not accept the Raivit's premise that back in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Nusach HaBrach was Lahadlik with a Lamed.
But can you just say, according to the Rambam, doesn't Rambam hold that if the like Mila, the difference between the father doing the Mila and the Moil.
Right, but that's because there's a Maisa Mila. The Chiyuv is the Maisa Mila.
So the Kohen should do the Lah because he's the Hadlaka.
But the Hadlaka is not the Maisa Mitzvah. That's what Reb Chaim says. The Rambam Shita, according to Reb Chaim, is not that there's a Mitzvah doing the Maisa Hadlaka. If let's say you could magically, say abracadabra, and the menorah would be lit. That also would be a fulfillment of the mitzvah. It's really a mitzvah in the mikdash. It's not a mitzvah in the gavra, in the act. It's in the chefta, the big. And any mitzvah on the chefta is always the bracha is always with an is always with an
lit.
Correct. To have it lit in the mikdash, and this is a terminology that we used. In our shiurim, we used it with regard to Ner Chanukah, that there are two definitions of the mitzvah Ner Chanukah. For example, there was one definition called Hanochos of mitzvah, which means, according to Tosfos, that a Cheresh Shotev Kohen could light the menorah, and then I could put the menorah, place it in its place. I've equipped my bias with the menorah of Chanukah, Ner Chanukah, and that's the mitzvah. There's no doubt that according to that Mandayoma, the Nusach HaBracha would be Al Adlokas Ner Chanukah. We paskin, not like that Mandayoma. We paskin that Adlokos of mitzvah. So if we paskin Adlokos of mitzvah, then I can say a bracha with a lamed lahadlik, because lahadlik means I'm obligated in the maisa adloka. If I can magically get an Ner Doluk, that would not be enough. In the case of Ner Shabbos, by the way, it's very interesting, because Ner Shabbos has two dimensions to it. One dimension is the maisa adloka, and therefore, let's say the candle was lit Friday morning, I have to put it out and rekindle it. But then the Kiyum HaMitzvah is the Onik Shabbos, when I eat my meal to the light of the Ner Shabbos, and that's a Ner Doluk. So that the Bracha now can reflect the Lamed Lahadlik because of the element of the Maisa Mitzvah, the Maisa Adlok.
Does the Rambam hold that it's the same Bracha in the Mikdash as in this?
No, I don't know that the Rambam ever bought into that. That's the assumption of the Raivad. The Raivad is trying to defend the Rambam. A very rare occasion where the Raivad tries to defend the Rambam. So the defense of the Raivad for the Rambam is that, okay, really the bracha on Ner Chanukah in and of itself should be Al Adlokas Ner Chanukah, like Al Mikra Megillah, because it's a Rishus. As we said before, There's no Maisa Mitzvah which the Torah recognizes. The Maisa is only a means to achieve the Kiyum of Sha'al Avicha V'Yagedcha. Whether the Rama would buy into that, I do not know. But what Rav Soloveitchik is trying to argue is that even if, let's say, conceptually the Rambam would have agreed to the Ravid, that maybe the Nusach HaBracha of Ner Chanukah should reflect the way it was recited in the Mikdash, nevertheless, paradoxically, the Rambam himself in the Mikdash would advocate in favor of a bracha with an al and not with a lamed. So, kshibana beis hamikdash b'meir v'yameinu, we're going to have to figure out what will be the nusach of the Kohen when he lights the menorah. Is he going to say al or lid? And Rav Soloveitchik, from his perspective, would claim that it depends upon the Rambam and the Ravid in Bias Mikdash, meaning, well, if a zar could light the menorah, the Rambam of Shita, then the mitzvah is not the act of hadlaka. And if that be the case, you don't make a bracha with a lamed, because the lamed is always indicating the maisa mitzvah. There is no Torah's maisa mitzvah.
Yeah, can't the Rambam say that there's, just like we have hadlakas and eros tanka, there's two components. Why can't the Rambam, where does the Rambam, are we clear that the Rambam doesn't have a separate component for Kohen to make the hadlaka? In other words, is it no? Because it says, the pasuk is set, it's clear, it seems to be.
But the fact that the Rambam holds that Bahaloscha Saneros, how do you translate Bahaloscha, means that there should be a menorah with the lights going up in the Mikdash, then the mice is not significant. Meaning, the mice, very often, I have to do an action in order to achieve a goal.
Means to the end.
It's a means to the end. But the action per se has no status. The very fact that the Rambam elevates a zar to the status of lighting the candle means that the lighting of the candle has no inherent status.
And the shechita is the same too. The zar can do the shechita too. Why is that not? Why is that so?
Right, so shechita is an al for another reason, because there's no chiyuv. Now you could ask again about shechitas kodshim, if let's say I bring my own karbon or shechitas pesach, and there in Ochinam the Gemara says that if I'm doing the shechita on my own karbon, or for example Kohen, let's say Kohen brings a karbon shlamim and he does the shechita, he would make a bracha with a lamed, but there's a maisa shechita, and that's one of the four avodos. In fact, all the psulim of shechita apply even to all the psulim of the four avodos apply to shechita as well. A shechita is a maisa shechita. But the only question is there a chiv to implement that maisa shechita? So when we say a bracha with a lamed, we mean two things. And they both boxes have to be checked off. Number one, there's a chovas gavra. Number two, it's a maisa mitzvah. And if you can't check off one of those two, you're going to have to shift the bracha to this more all-encompassing bracha of al. Now, in the case of bedikas chametz, the Rambam says the bracha is al bir chametz. Why? Because you've already made bittul. And now you're no longer making the bracha on the maisa, because you've already done the maisa. And therefore you need, a more all-encompassing nusach, and that's going to be al bir chametz. Without the Rambam, we could have said something totally different. That the reason why al is appropriate for bedikas chametz is because the mitzvah is made up of two components, and there's number one, the act of looking for the chametz, and number two, the act of destroying the chametz. So I can't isolate and focus on one particular maaseh, because, or you can even go a step further and say that maybe bedikah is not a maaseh mitzvah, like the Gemara says that afilu katan. Right, heim hem nu. You remember the Gemara on Daf Dalet Amud Beis that we do, that heim amru veheim amru applies to bedikas chametz. So you see clearly that bedikas chametz is not a maaseh mitzvah, it's only a means to an end, to find the chametz, and the real maaseh is going to be the burning the chametz down the line. And therefore, that has to be indicated by a nusach habrach of al. So there are many ways you can explain why the Gemara says hilchasa al bir chametz. Okay, let's get back to makom shemachnisim bo chametz. And we're going to focus our attention now on defining a makom she'ein machnisim bo chametz, which you're not chayev to be bodek. And the Gemara says the following. Kol makom lasuye mai. The extra word kol, what's it coming to include that you and I might have thought should require a bedika, but the Mishnah tells me it doesn't require a bedika. So the Gemara says lasuye ha detan rabbanim. We're going to learn the brisa. The brisa is going to give us three categories of makomos that did not require bedika, because generally speaking, you would not bring chametz in there. The first category is called chorin, otherwise known as Chorei Habayis. Right, there are all sorts of crevices, especially in those days they had stone walls, that was very common. There's sugyas all over Shas about what you find in the stone walls, whether there's a mitzvah of Hashava, whether you have to assume it, you know, dates back to an earlier period of time and therefore belonged to the Kananim. There are issues about finding things in a kosel and whether or not Bechlal is a mitzvah of Hashava Saveda in a kosel. What else can I think of? Many, many other different sugyas in Shas. Well, so now, if you have a crevice somewhere in the kosel, that's a great place to put not just the kvittel, but a piece of chametz. But the Gemara says, Elyonim v'tachtorim. There are certain crevices that are very high up. You'd have to take a major ladder to get up there and then hide your chametz there. And there are certain crevices that are so low down that, again, you wouldn't normally use them. And the chiddush here of our Mishnah, by emphasizing kol makom, is that these places where occasionally, maybe, you know, in some remote possibility, you did put chametz there, do not require bedikah. Then we have the following case.
Does that mean that the removal is, if there was chametz in this place, the removal is taken care of by the bittel?
Correct. Excellent, Phil. Excellent. So bittel, in the worst case scenario, you have chametz somewhere hidden up there or down there, you covered it with bittel, and the chacham are not going to require bedika. Now again, there are two ways of learning this Gemara. Rashi would learn that there's no chashash of al yerabai matzi. We have no reason to assume that he would have, on any occasion, the last 365 days, put chametz there. Tosis might say that even if I argue that maybe he did put chametz there, I'm not going to assume that he's going to eat that chametz because it's so inaccessible. There's no shema yovel liochlo. That was Tosis' sheet at the beginning of the Masechta. Now we have a discussion about other places that are very, very that are not comfortable for use. One is called Gag Yitzia. Gag Yitzia means you have a very low building, which is next door to your house, and it has a roof, so theoretically, you can get out from your house onto the roof. Do you have to check the roof of that house? And the answer is that Gag is called Meshupa. Meshupa means it's on an incline. If it's on an incline, therefore you don't usually use something that's on an incline. Then you have something called Gag HaMigdal. This is also a case of something that has an incline. In this case, we're talking about a Migdal is usually what we call a closet. So they had closets that were shaped in a certain way, and most of the closets were absolutely functional in a normal way, and they were very comfortable to use. They had drawers and places for you to put things down, and that requires bedinka. But in this case, in the case of the Gag of the Migdal, that on top, the top of this, in Hebrew it's called an aron, I think in English you'd call it a dresser or something along that line, the top part of the dresser was actually on an incline, and therefore you wouldn't use it. Then you have the case of places where there are animals. Refes bakar v'lulim. I don't know, Rabosa, have you ever worked in a lul?
Yes.
Yeah? As youngsters, that's what we used to do. We used to go to kibbutz, and we would volunteer, and they would put us in the lul. I once got stuck in a turkey coop, and all of a sudden, I was looking at hundreds of turkeys that were looking me right in the eyes. I ran out of there as soon as I could. I didn't know what they were about to, you know, they were planning some sort of rebellion against me. I don't know. I wasn't taking any chances. And a bakar is, you know, you're talking about cows and so forth and so on. I taught for 10 years in a yeshiva called Chalavim. I don't know what it's like today, but in those days, I mean, as soon as you knew when you came anywhere near Shalavim, by the smell of it, because it's the same today, it hasn't improved. And in such a case, the assumption is that since you feed these animals will eat, you know, will eat the chametz. If you left over any chametz there, you can consider it as if it's gone. And there's going to be a whole sugya about this in the beginning of the second perek with regard to birds and other kinds of animals and whether we can assume that any chametz was consumed by the animals. Then we have something called a mitban. A mitban is otherwise known as in modern Hebrew as a beit ha-teven. Beit ha-teven is a place where they keep straw and things of that sort. And generally speaking, that's not where you bring food. Then we have otzos yayin and otzos shemen, and this is going to be a whole sugya, because sometimes in the case of a cellar, right, with a C, a cellar where you keep wines and you store oil, all these things have to be brought out to the table. So if you have a butler, he may hold a piece of chametz in his mouth and he goes down there and he accidentally left his chametz behind. But we're going to get into a whole sugya about this in a few minutes. What's common to this entire list is ein srichim b'dika. In other words, even though there is some way in chash, you know, we should really consider the possibility that, the remote possibility that maybe chametz got to those places. You know, maybe he was climbing on a ladder and he put a piece of chametz in the crevice, or maybe the animals didn't eat up the chametz, or maybe, you know, maybe despite the fact that it's on a slant, he did leave chametz there and it got stuck somewhere on its way down. Maybe the butler went into the otzos yayin, otzos shemen, and he left some chametz there. So that's what the Mishnah wants to add, the word kol makom. Even places that you and I might think, oh, that's a borderline. Maybe it is machnisim bo chametz. Maybe once a year they did bring in chametz. No, it's considered kol makom, and it's defined and classified as ein machnisim bo chametz. And Rabosai, this sugya, as we get into it, is going to project us into the concepts called rove and miut. There's going to be a whole discussion here in the Ravid sheet about whether or not we can rely on rove and say that in most cases there's no chametz there. Is that enough to exempt me from bedika? Now, when we get to rove, we're going to have to talk about different categories of rove. There's called a rove with a miyut matzui, there's a rove with a miyut she'eino matzui, and that's all at the beginning of Yoredeya with regard to shechita. We rely on someone who shechts an animal to assume he's a baki, that he knows how to shecht an animal. That's based on a rove. But the question is, do we have to check him out? Maybe we should take him in front of a board of shochtim and test him and see if he really knows his beans about shechita. Can we rely on the rove? Do we have to check? And here, all those discussions really start right here. They're rooted and anchored in this sugya here of bedikas chametz. We have to check for chametz when we have a strong rov to believe that there's no chametz there. Reb Shim Gamliel Omer, he wants to add another category that could be on the borderline. But in this case, it's bifnim. It's on the middle, but it's still within the category of makom shemachnisim bo chametz. And what is this case? Mita choleches besoch habayis. You could have a bed that has legs, and there's space under the legs. It's not a bed that's samud lakarka, you know, it's connected to the ground. And it's choleches betoch habayis. In other words, there is a part of the house that's on the other side of this mita. So now the bed serves a double function. Number one, you sleep in the bed, but number two, it also serves a function as a choleches. It divides up the room. Have you ever had this experience where, if you live in tight quarters, again, for those of you who may have started life not with a silver spoon in your mouth, but, you know, when you first got married, you had to live in tight quarters. So what couples find, this is a psychological rule that seems to be very common, that they spend a lot of time rearranging furniture. Because you have such tight spaces, you want to see how you can maximize the space and make it more aesthetically appealing, so you move things around. So in those days, one of the ways of hiding a divider, what we call a machitza, that it shouldn't be so obvious, you know, but should be more blending into the atmosphere, the ambiance of the room, is to use a mita as a machitza. And umafsekes, Reb Shim Gamliel adds another word here, meaning mafsekes means that there's a space, a hefsek, what we call in Hebrew halal, open space, which is underneath the bed. So Reb Shim Gamliel says tzricha bedika. You know, it's in this case, it's not included under ein machnisim bo chametz, but rather it's machnisim bo chametz. What's the implication of Reb Shim Gamliel? When would this mita not require a bedika underneath it? Correct. If it's not mafsekes, if there's no empty space between the mita and and the floor itself. But here there's a chala.
You don't have any kids in your house.
You're right, and it's absolutely on the floor. But here's a case where it's considered machnisim bo chametz. And the Gemara now is going to quote another brisa, also in the name of Rav Shimon Gamliel, that comes to the opposite conclusion, that a mitah does require bidika v'raminu. And I'll ask you a question from another brisa. Now this brisa contradicts what we've been saying until now in two different categories. Number one, we spoke about chorei habayis, and we said that these crevices that are very high up or very low down are uncomfortable for use, and they don't require bidika. And guess what? The brisa says the exact opposite. Chor shebein adam lechavero. So for example, if you have a kosel, a very thick wall that separates between you and your neighbor, so what do you do in this case? Each one of the two neighbors has to stick his arm into these crevices and stretch the arm as far as you can go. You know, it's like when you kasher an oven, you turn it on to the highest heat that it can get to, right? So you stretch your arm because that's the furthest use that you might have had. And hashar, anything else that might have somehow gotten pushed even deeper into the hole, is mevatlo belibo, and we could add the word vidayo. It would be enough that he does bitul. Why? Because the assumption is that if he put chametz into these chorim, then it only reached that depth of Kadesh Yodam Agas. Also, according to Tosfos, that the whole thrust and purpose of Bedikah is to avoid Achila, then if it went even further in, then even if somehow he would forget himself and put his arm in and take something out, he wouldn't be able to reach, so there's no chashash of achilu. But in any event, here we're talking about chorin. Again, it's a little different than the first case, because the first case of chorin was not talking about two neighbors that shared a kosel. But in any event, the same principle the Gemara thinks should apply. And if we're not worried about chorin, then why should we require bedika? So again, you and I can give an answer to this question. We don't even have to see the Gemara's answer. What answer could we give? In general, do chorim require bedikah or not? What would you say? It depends. I always need that answer. Okay. It depends. If the chorim are very high up or very low down, that's not accessible or it's not comfortable. But if the chorim are right there in the middle, so who says, when this brisa says chorim shebein adam lechavero, we're talking about these very high up chorim and the very low chorim. Then the Gemara asks the second kasha. And this is going to be the kasha on mita. Rav Shimon Gamliel, according to the second transmission, says, mita cholekes besoch habayis, v'eitzim v'avonim sturim tachteha, umafsekes. So again, we have a bed that is laying down, it's being held up by planks of wood or by stones, which are underneath it, but umaf sekes, which means that there is some sort of a halal, right, between the bed itself and what's underneath it. And yet, to our surprise, Rav Shimon Gamliel is quoted as saying, "Einat tzricha bedika." It doesn't require bedika. So we have a double kasha. Kasha mita mita. The first price indicated, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, yachayev in bedika underneath the mita. The second price says you don't have to do bedika underneath the mita. And flip it around, l'chumra l'kula, in the case of chorin, kasha chorin, the first brisa says that chorin did not require bedika, and the second brisa requires bedika in chorin. So Gemara starts with the easy answer. Chorin, achorin lo kasha, that's not a hard kasha to answer. Ha bi'iloi ubetatai, ve'ha bi'mitziyai. The first brisa that exempts you from bedika in the case of chorin, that's talking about either iloi, meaning the top ones, all the way on top, or tatoi, all the way on the bottom, and we're not afraid that you put chametz there. The second brisa is b'mitziyai. Mitziyai means the middle one. And the middle one is very comfortable to use, and therefore it's chayv in bedika. Oh. Now the Gemara says, you know what? Let's use the same methodology to answer up the seeming contradiction regarding mita. Mita, mita lo kasha is no contradiction. Ha, the first brisa that says you're chayav in bedika, that's a case of dimidlaya. Dimidlaya means that it's very high up. the mita is at a, let's say it's a foot, 2 feet, or a meter, 2 meters above the ground. So there's a halal, there's a very serious, significant space below the mita, and it's noach l'tashmisho. He might have used it, and therefore he has to find the chametz thing. The second price is talking about mitatoi. We're talking about a bed that is very low down, and therefore there's hardly any space between the base of the bed and anything below the bed, and therefore you're parted from Bedika. Now the Gemara says, you know what? With regard to otzros, which are cellars that are either designated for wine or for oil, we also find a contradiction. The first brisa says that otzros yain ain sarach bedika. So the Gemara says, Vasanya, we have another brisa that says otzros yain sarach bedika. The second brisa admits that otzros shemen ain sarach bedika. Now, there's good news here, because that means there's no contradiction, at least as far as Shemen is concerned. Both the first and the second brises agree that also Shemen are exempt from Bedika, because the assumption is that you don't go there with bread. So that's good. But the second brisa makes this distinction between Yayin and Shemen, that in the case of Yayin, there is a chashash of chametz there, meaning that sometimes a person goes in there to get wine for his table, and he goes in the middle of a meal and he's holding on to some chametz. Maybe he left it there in the otzos yayin. Oh, so the Gemara says, wait a minute, if you're going to tell me hocha b'mayaskinim b'mistapek, that the case where the second brisa says that otzos yayin is mistapek. Mistapek means that in the middle of his suda he goes down to the wine cellars in order to retrieve some extra wine for his table. Meaning, he thought when he set up the table they would only drink one bottle of wine. Then all of a sudden some guests showed up. They were probably Frenchmen, like my mother-in-law used to say that she spent 5 years in France after the war, and she said there was plenty of wine, you know, at every meal, breakfast, lunch, and supper. That's the French drink, wine with meals. I don't know if it's true today, but that's what it was 55 years ago. And it's very common that you run out in the middle of the meal. You know, some new guests arrive, or maybe people got very thirsty, so you go down, and while you're holding on to a piece of bread, you go into the otzos yayin. No, so the Gemara says, Ihachi, Shemen Nami, what about the otzos of Shemen? Isn't it very logical that in the middle of the meal they realize they need an extra volume of Shemen, and they go down into the otzos of Shemen and they're holding on to a pita? So Gemara says, Shemen yesh kval achila, but yayin ain kval ishtia. As far as achila is concerned, they knew exactly how much Shemen they could evaluate and anticipate how much Shemen they would need in the middle of the meal. They could supply a complete ample supply of Shemen that was placed on the table even before the meal started. There was no occasion, or I guess it was rare if it existed at all, where they would have to, in the middle of the meal, they'd have to realize, well, we ran out of Shemen. But Yayin ain keval ishtir. You can never know exactly how much Yayin you need in a meal. So therefore it's very common that in the middle of the meal you go down to the cellar and you take out one. Tani Rabbi Chia, Asu Otzros Sheikhar Bibavel, Ka Otzros Yain Beretz Yisrael Bimistapik. That in Bavel, the classic drink was Sheikhar, was beer. At every meal they had an ample supply of beer. But Mistapik means that sometimes they went down to the beer cellar, because in the middle of the meal in Bavel they realized, oh no, we ran out of Sheikhar. And it's again a case, as we saw before, in Yayin of Ein Keval Ishtiyah. So you don't know exactly how much beer you'll need. All of a sudden people want more beer. And therefore you need Bedika in the Otzos of Sheikhar down in Bavel, like you need in the Otzos Yayin in Eretz Yisrael. The same logic applies.
Beer is chametz, isn't it?
Beer is chametz.
So what's the question here?
Well, we're looking for pieces of chametz. We're looking for pitas.
The whole place is chametz. The whole cellar is chametz.
Correct. So he clears out all his sheikhar before Pesach. Maybe he drinks it. Maybe he sells it.
Okay, so
But he didn't clean out the otzer. So there may be chametz that the pita.
The peanut butter jelly sandwich.
But while you're clearing out the sheikhar, you're clearing out that room, aren't you?
I guess he didn't do a bedika. You know, every case of bedika really means you've cleaned it out beforehand. I tell my wife to do a good job cleaning it out beforehand. That doesn't exempt me from bedika. I mean, my wife thinks it does. She doesn't understand why am I taking apart the couch when we did the couch with every single vacuum cleaner that you could imagine.
She's right.
But you need a bedika or a nair. Li or haner, and it's got to be belila when or haner is yosel bedika. And it's got to be b'chavonet chila. All the dinim of b'dika, which we're going to learn in Mitzvah Shem, that's not the same as house cleaning, spring cleaning. Again, with all due respect to spring cleaning, we're going to definitely encourage the women folk or the men folk, whoever does it, to do the greatest spring cleaning they can. But that's not b'dika's chametz. Omar Avchiz the Beit Dogim, what's the status of a cellar? I guess it was a little bit cool, that's where they used like a refrigeration, and they kept the fish. Did they know, you know, up front in the at the Suda how much fish they would need to supply enough for the entire meal? So Avchiz the says, Ein Tzarech Bedika, that we don't go down in the middle of the meal to get more fish. We know exactly how much fish to bring out at the beginning of the meal. So the Gemara asks for a Tanya, we have a Bryson that says just the opposite, Tzrichim Bedika. So again, the pattern of this Gemara repeats itself over and over again. We're going to have cases where there's a stira, there's a contradiction between two statements, and the answer is going to be that it all depends upon whether or not there's a frequency of chametz there. Lo kasha, haba rav revei, or bezutre. There are different kinds of fish. And rav revei means large fish, and in the case of large fish, you bring out let's say a salmon, I don't know, I assume a salmon is a pretty large fish, right? And that salmon is meant to last through the entire meal. That's called the Yeshlem Keva. It's like the case of what we spoke about, Shemen, that also shall Shemen, you know more or less how much Shemen you need and supply, and you're well supplied. Here also with Rav Revi, you have enough fish to last through the meal. But Hav is Zutri. But what about these small fish that we eat, you know, what are they called?
Sardines.
Sardines, exactly. That's exactly the word I needed. Thank you, Asher. Sardines. The reason I forgot the word is first, I haven't eaten sardines in years. Yeah, I once was thinking of trying the Atkins diet. Did you ever hear of it?
Yes.
Yes, so he's very into sardines.
High protein.
Yeah. Okay. I never liked sardines. I never got a taste.
That's why
for it.
I haven't eaten them for a long time.
Right. I never got into sardines. Never appealed to me. But you know, there's some people in Mamish live on sardines, and that's called zutri. Those are small fish, you know. So you pack in some sardines, you put it on the table, and lo and behold, they eat up all the sardines. And in the middle of the Suda, you got to send down the butler into the Bay Doggy and look out for the chametz that he might have left there in this Bay Doggy. Yeah. Bay Doggy. Okay. Omar Rabba Baravuna, Bay Milcha, they used to keep salt in storage. Ube kire. Kire is wax, and they used to again use that wax for candles on their table. And the question is, do we know exactly up front how much salt to put on the table? Do we have an ample supply? Or is it elam kevav? We might need salt in the middle of the meal. The same thing for neros in the middle of a suda. Om Rav Papa. I'm sorry, I skipped. Omar Rabba Barachuna, Barhuna, Tzricha Bedika. In other words, we really don't know exactly how much salt to put on the table, and very often we run out of a supply of salt, or the same thing in Neros in the middle of the meal, therefore you should go down and check these places. Omar Rav Popo.
It just occurs to me that you keep talking about the middle of the meal and the butler going down. It's highly unlikely the butler is going to be eating at the same time as the people he's serving. What's more likely is that, I mean, he's going to go down to all these places, even places where it says that they're not going to check. He's going to be going down there any time of the day or night to bring up the supplies. It's at that time when he's like off duty, you know, nobody can see. He may very well have a sandwich. So why?
I guess we're assuming
he's
that
going to have the sandwich
the kitchen,
when he's
in the kitchen.
I guess we're assuming that a person who's in employment, you know, should not be taking sandwiches down.
Fine.
We can somewhat justify it in the middle of the meal. You know, all of a sudden, I call, you know, Joe the butler, and I said to him, "Look, I'm really urgent." And before he even gets a chance, you know, he runs down in the middle of the meal.
I was going to say he's not going to be eating when he's serving you. That's when he's not going to be eating. You would.
Well, the Gemara can actually talk about this in the last Perek of Pesachim, whether or not he's eating while he's serving.
Exactly.
For example, the Gemara says that a shamash also has to do what's called haseba, because in the middle of the meal we're going to make sure that he does haseba as well. So you get the impression that the, you know, the butlers, and sometimes it would even be the family members, would go down into the otzos in the middle of the meal.
But I was going to say, I would assume most families don't have butlers. We
right. Well, you members of the family. The same logic, I think, would apply to members of the family, that if in the middle of the meal, you know, you have to send your son or your daughter down there.
Right.
And we have a tendency of asking our children to do things for us, so they may actually have a bread in their hands. Tana, we learned in a braisa. Oh, this is a fascinating sugya. Ein mechayven also lahachnis yado lechorin ulistokim livdok mipnei hasakana. The Brisa says that with regard to chorin, forget about our discussions about chorin. You know, we said that in many cases, you know, the chorin are accessible, and therefore you should have to do bedika. Maybe there's chometz there. And yet, this Brisa says that there's another factor, a mitigating factor that has to be considered, and that's called what? Sakana. So what ensues now is an entire discussion about what exactly is the sakana. And this sugya that we're going to learn on has tremendous repercussions for Shas, you know, for different halachic issues that come up over and over again in terms of how to define sakana. So the Gemara says, my sakana. Now here's a funny kind of thing. What we're really looking for is a sakana which somehow is only relevant to taking the chametz out of the char, meaning to do a bdika. But yet, how did the chametz get there to begin with? You know, was he suicidal when he used this char? If there's scorpions in this hole, or there might be a scorpion, is kimish tamish hechish tamish? Again, you may say that he doesn't care about the scorpions, but we're not talking about an idiot. And not only that, in such a case, it's so far flung that we should, you know, be worried about the outside chance that he put chametz in a place where, in order to get access to that place, he has to put his life into danger. You know, like the brothers who threw Yosef down to the bottom of the pit, and there were akravim there. Again, you know, I just for the point of notifying you, I'm sure you know this better than I do, but I still think it's always kedai to emphasize. There are two types of akravim here in this country. There are black spiders and yellow spiders. Black spiders are not, again, it's not fun to get bitten by a black spider, but it's not life-threatening. But a yellow spider, what's called an akrav tahov, that is very, very dangerous. And in fact, if chas v'shalom, you ever have an occasion where somebody got bitten by a scorpion, then take it with you.
Scorpions or spiders?
Scorpions, I meant to say. Scorpions. Akrav is a scorpion. Did I say a spider? I meant to say a scorpion. Sorry. Cross out. Spiders. And yellow scorpions are very, very dangerous. And what you do is, the medical field knows how to take from the scorpion itself a certain serum that's an antidote that could save your life. I only know this from, unfortunately, personal experience in my family. Not me, but someone very close to me who got bitten by a scorpion. And the first thing they said when we got to Hadassah Medical School, a medical hospital, was, "Where's the scorpion?" You know, "Oh, where's the scorpion?" You know, like, "Oh, sure," you know. I took it as a souvenir. You know what I'm saying? Like,
grab it in my hand.
Yeah. So Lotricha, the Gemara says the Nafal. Oh, now this is such a classical Gemara. The Gemara always talks about a kosel that was used in its proper form when it stood vertically, and then subsequently the kosel fell. And when you find things in the kosel after it's rubble, that's a whole different story. So what happened is that there was no real fear of scorpions at the time when the kosel was healthy and vertical. Maybe they used certain poisons to kill all the scorpions. I don't know. But then, after a certain period of time, the coastal collapsed, Humpty Dumpty, right? And now, the place is infested with all sorts of creatures, amongst them some very dangerous ones. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, Enafal, Lamalei Bedika, he doesn't have to find the chametz that might, over the course of time, might have been buried under the rubble. Vatnan, we have a Mishnah later on, and the Mishnah says, Chametz Enafal of Mapolis, if a chametz is buried under debris, under an avalanche, Hareyu Kimavur, Alpidin, it's considered inaccessible. I mean, the Gemara has all sorts of conditions that have to be met. It's got to be three tefachim down or whatever it might be, but the very basic principle is that Naflo Mapoles, it's already considered Mavur, which is a Gevaldik Achidish. The Gemara is saying that Mavur doesn't mean that you have to physically destroy the chametz and turn it into ashes. It means that if the chametz is inaccessible, then it's not considered chametz. And this all fits into our discussion, who remembers the Ramban that I spent a lot of time on, that really you don't even own chametz, but the Torah put it into your reshus, and the Torah says, I consider it as if it's yours. But if something is totally inaccessible, it's buried under the debris, then it's not considered yours anymore. It's mavur. It's like out of human range. So Gemara says, Hasam, there in the case of the Mishnah, we have a case where it was buried to such an extent under degree that ein akelav yochel chapes achrov, that even a dog who looks, he's mechotet, he digs up the ground in order to look for food, he's not going to go that deep below the ground level in order to remove the debris and finally discover a piece of chametz. But hacha, the Bryce is talking about a case, kshakelav yochel chapes achrov, where it's not so deep down, buried below the debris. Let's say it's within three tefachim, it's close to ground level. And in that case, you're obligated to clear out the debris and look for chametz. So the answer is, you don't have to do so. Why don't you have to do so? Because of another element here in the equation. What's that? Sakana. Okay, so if not for sakana, you would actually have to be bodek. So if there was no chashash of akrovim there, then in this case where the debris is very surface level, it's not deep down, then you would have to be bodek. So the Gemara now, this is an amazing piece of Gemara. The Gemara says, we should require him to be bodek even if there's a fear of scorpions. Are you ready for this, Rabosai? Hold on to your chairs, because this is so out of our league here. Omar Rav Ashi, I'm sorry, for Omar Rabbi Elazar, Rav Ashi is going to be the answer to this question, but the question is, what about the statement of Rabbi Elazar, Shluchei Mitzvah Einam Nizakim? Now look, Rabosai, if you would have told me Shluchei Mitzvah Einam Nizakim, when you do a mitzvah, you have the divine promise and protection, I would have said that's an agadic statement. It's a very nice philosophical idea, but in terms of danger, I don't consider that a halachic principle, but the Gemara sees this as a pure halachic principle in terms of Yechiyah Bedika. So that if you're involved in a mitzvah, you're protected, you don't have to worry about scorpions. And now the Gemara is going to cut that down. That this Shluchei Mitzvah Nizakim is not what you think it is. It doesn't always apply. The first way the Gemara whittles it down is by saying, Omar Rav Ashi, Shema Ta'avid Lo Machad, V'Asi Liyuni Basra. What the Gemara is saying is that not every case of a mitzvah is a pure mitzvah. There are cases where the mitzvah itself has benefit for the person. In the case of Bedikas Chametz, I don't know if you ever had this experience. Again, Chametz we never find, but we find a lot of other things. Most of them are pins and buttons and children's toys and stuff like that we're going to go throw straight into the rubbish. But occasionally, we find something that we've been looking for years. So when my wife asks me, why are you breaking your back on this bedika for hours, and then after 10 years I find a ring that's worth something, now I understand for 10 years why you've been killing yourself for the bedika. But in such a case, if he's looking for a ring, the Gemara has the case of a machat, why it was very common that you would lose a needle a weaving needle. You know, it was very thin and it was very easy to get lost. And you and I would say, well, the machat is probably not worth a, it's not worth a penny, but in the Gemara's context, the machat was valuable. Now, if he lost a machat, the asi liyuni basra, and he's looking for his machat, then he's really not motivated by the mitzvah b'dikas chametz, and in that case, he's not afforded or guaranteed the protection of shluchei mitzvah nizakim. So the Gemara says, do you mean to tell me that when I'm doing a mitzvah, I'm not allowed to benefit from a mitzvah? If let's say I have some side benefit from a mitzvah, and then it's not a shluchei mitzvah anymore, kahai gavno lav mitzvah, in such a case where he's also hoping to find his lost machat. He's looking for chametz, he's hoping he'll find a machat. That doesn't undermine his mitzvah. For Asanya, I'll prove it to you from a braisa, Omer sela zulit staka. Remember, this is one of the most important principles in Hilchus staka. It's a mind-boggling principle that a person gives a certain significant amount of staka, and Bishvil, he knows the skula. You know, the inherent power of tzedakah, b'shvil sheyichye b'ni, Nebuchadnezzar, he has a son who's not well, and he dedicates the money for the well-being and the restoration of health for his son. Oh, or he says, she'eya ben olam haba. You know, this is my way of getting a ticket into paradise. So now we turn to the Avches Amid Beis. Harezeh, again, there are two different girsos here, but our girsa says, harezeh tzadik gomur. That the fact that he wants to get some side benefit from this mitzvah in no way undermines the lishma of the mitzvah, and therefore it is a mitzvah. So the fact that he wants to get a side benefit, hopefully he'll find a machat that he lost 6 months ago while he's looking for chametz, that doesn't undermine his mitzvah. It's still considered lishma, and therefore he'll still be afforded with protection. And the Gemara answers, Dilma Basar de Badak, after he finishes Bedika, Asi Li'iyune Basra, he's going to then look again, you know, give it an extra effort and say, well, maybe I'll find a machat. And at that moment, he's exposed to the danger of all these scorpions, and therefore, Shluchei Mitzvah, Enam Nizakim, doesn't apply, and it becomes a Makom Sakana. So Rabosei, take a look. It becomes a Sakana, not because he's doing the right thing, the way we formulated or, you know, designed the mitzvah, but because Tokidei the mitzvah, he's going to drop, you know, when he concludes the mitzvah, he's no longer involved in the mitzvah, and at this point, he's exposing himself to a danger. So we go back now to Rabbi Elezer on Ovid Aleph, who says, I'm sorry, the Brice on Amar Alf that says that Ein Mechayven Oso Lahachnis Yodo Lechorin is stuck and lived up Nea Sakana. What we're really worried about is that after he finishes, he concludes his Bedik, he's going to look for. Now, Abosai, have you ever been to a place? Okay, I have some experts here in the audience. I'm embarrassed to even ask this question. Have you ever visited a place called Kfar Nachum up north? I think in English it's called Copernicus. How do you pronounce it? Copernicus, whatever it's called. Anyway, it's one of the oldest mosaic floors in the world of a shul. I mean to say, a mosaic floor of a shul. It's an amazing place to see because most of the floor they have. But the cool thing about it, for me, from my perspective, I don't care about what the tour guides have to say, is that on the outside there is one remnant of the entire shul, of the structure of the shul, and it's a part that tells you who dedicated the shul. Now imagine, 16 centuries have passed by since a guy named Nochum, or whatever his name was, I forget, dedicated some money for the building of a shul. And we still see his name on top of the shul. And the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch, in Yoredeya, that if you give tzedakah and you want your name to be up there, it's perfectly okay. And he calls it L'shem L'Tiferes. The Rama is very outspoken. And the answer is that this does not undermine the mitzvah. My only question is, and with this I leave you for today, is that a din mesuyam, is that a separate halacha in tzedakah, or does it apply to every mitzvah? Can a person take any mitzvah out of the 248, we'll leave out one that's called tzedakah, and the other 247, and can he say, I'm doing this mitzvah in order that my son should experience a rehabilitation, or in order that I should go into Olam HaBa? Or is this a separate din in tzedakah? And the reason I say it's a separate din in tzedakah is because in tzedakah, we want to get the tzedakah no matter what motivates you. I couldn't care less. Tachlis, are you giving the money? Are the poor people gaining the money? Is the synagogue being built? That's what I'm interested in. And you want to get side benefits? That's okay. Not only that, the Ramon goes even a step further. He says that if your name is on the shul, this is my father, whenever you made a country, how do you say a magbit in English? Whenever you did a fundraiser, he would always be the first one to offer his pledge. Why? Because they knew what my father's salary was. And they had to make a kal v'chomer. If the rabbi could afford $100, then I could afford $1,000. And that's why in tzedakah, we're motivated to bend the halacha backwards, and very pliable, in order to get people to come and give as much tzedakah. But this Gemara seems to indicate that this is not a separate halacha in tzedakah, because the Gemara wants to use tzedakah as a proof that even if he's looking not only for chametz but also for something lost, he still is involved in the mitzvah. The problem is when he finishes the bedikah and then he continues to give it another look and he puts his hand in again, and guess what? He might get bitten by a squirrel. Okay, we both have a great day. Okay.